So we are doing this text called Bhakti Sudha or the Nectar of Devotion. And we first started with prostrations to the Lord and to the teacher. And then the author talks about the four goals of life. One is accumulation of wealth or possessions. One is sense pleasures. And he says they should be both controlled with righteousness, but the higher than that is liberation or freedom from the bondage of all these possessions. But he said love for God or bhakti or devotion to the Lord is even higher than liberation. Why? Because devotion or love for God is of the nature of supreme love, unconditional love, love not based on what I can get, but a spontaneous outpouring of love for God. And last week we had talked a little bit about it. What is the difference between love and attachment? Attachment is where I depend on something. It could be a person like a spouse or a child. It could be an object like wealth or money or my house or my car. Or it could be the attachment to the body, that I am this body and I do everything for taking care of this body. So this was what we had studied last time, and how through giving up attachment for these objects, one can cultivate love for God or the highest love. Today we'll talk a little more about what is this supreme love and what defines supreme love and what is our obstacle in reaching this highest goal of oneness, not only with God, but when you become one with Him or her, you become one with the total universe, because everything is an expression of that one divinity. Every one of us is a creation of that. And so what separates me from God and separates me from others, we'll talk about that today. So it's verse number 7, page 12.
Ahamkaram tatha swartham. Ahamkaram tatha swartham. Tyaktva saktim grihadishu. Tyaktva saktim grihadishu. Saheshvarena tadatmyam. Saheshvarena tadatmyam. Paramam prema kathyate. Paramam prema kathyate.
So, paramam prema kathyate, supreme love. It is said, kathyate means it is said. That's what is supreme love. That's the last word. So, it says, ahamkaram tatha swartham. Ahamkara means ego. Ego and swartham is selfishness. Tyaktva, giving up ego and selfishness, and asakti means giving up attachment to griha adishu. Last week we had studied what are the things that we get attached to: my body, to my house, my objects, or the people, adi, etc. So giving up attachment to either the body or the objects, and giving up ego and selfishness, then what happens when you give up these? Saha Ishwarena, with the Lord, Tadatmyam, the oneness, that I am one with God, that is called supreme love. So, what is love? Love is identification. Even in the world, if you look at it, a mother's love for her child is as close to supreme love as we can find, because she totally identifies with the child, because she carried the child in her womb and then she, you know, takes care of the child and feeds her. And so she feels the oneness with the child, even if the child is hurting or suffering everywhere. The father, of course, does, because he also has spent so many years. So this instinctive oneness where whatever is happening to my child is happening to me. And the second aspect of that is sacrifice. where we find that in the case of love, whether it's love for a child or even love for a spouse, where I love my spouse, then there has to be an element of sacrifice, an element of oneness, an element of feeling that we are one. But when this is not there, when there is not this element of sacrifice, this element of love, this element of oneness, and when it is only a physical attachment, a physical dependence, then after a while, we find that, you know, it wears away, and then, you know, that's when problems happen. That's why they say in love, wonders happen, but in marriage, you wonder what happened. This one lady, you know, her husband never paid much attention to her, and so she was wishing somehow, you know, he would do that, and so she happened to come upon Aladdin's lamp. She was walking on the beach and she found this lamp and she rubbed it and out came this genie, and he said, I can only give you one wish. So she says, you know what, my husband doesn't pay attention to me. I want him to have eyes only for me. I want him to think of me all day. I want him to sleep beside me at night. And the first thing when he wakes up in the morning, he should take me with him. What? I want him to have eyes for me, think about me all day, sleep with me beside him. And first thing in the morning when he wakes up, he should take me with him. Genie said, no problem. He made her into an iPhone. So that is attachment. But true love is of the nature of sacrifice. So what is the obstacle in our sacrifice, and what is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? We'll come back to this subject later on, because this is what the goal of life is. So let us talk about what separates me from God and separates me from others. And here it is said, ahamkaram, this I notion, that is the ego, and that leads to selfishness. So what is the ego? People have different ideas about ego. I thought today I'll spend some time talking about ego, because ego people think of, some people think of arrogance, you know, he's very egocentric, he thinks he's somebody special. Or ego in Freud's terms, you know, talks about the lower self as opposed to the higher self, this. Truly, the ego is my wrong belief. A wise person said that within us, there are two individuals or two entities that live within all of us. One is called the ego, and one is called the wisdom or the wise self or the spiritual self. And most of our problems arise because I think of myself that I am a body with a soul. If you ask anybody, who are you? They say, oh, I am so-and-so, and I have a soul. Yes, I have a soul within me that is, we can call as life or consciousness or God. But the wise people tell us that you are a soul with a body. You are, in your fact, your true nature is of the nature of self or consciousness or wisdom, and you happen to occupy this body and function through this body. And that is where the whole problem arises. So it's not that we should fight with the ego or discard the ego, but we have to inquire, where does the ego arise from? Why do I feel myself separate from everybody else? Why do I feel so much stress in my life? Why do I feel so many problems? If I am that divine being, then I should be all peaceful. I should be like the saints. I should be like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Guru Nanak, all these wise people. What is the difference between me and them? Why were they so peaceful even through all the problems they faced? And why do I have so many problems? So they say ego is your false self. Our true self is of the nature of peace, of the nature of love, of the nature of compassion, of the nature of kindness, of the nature of universality. But my false self is the one that separates me from others, that thinks I am this limited body, that I am this limited individual, this is my name, I am male, I am female, and I am, you know, an American, I am Indian, I am young, I am old, I am short. And so, having thought myself to be this limited entity, then I get the sense of doership and enjoyership. So then I feel that I am doing this thing to acquire joy. And so all my life is spent in doing and acquiring because I think of myself to be this limited individuality. But when I see myself as this spiritual being, then spontaneously I get love for all. Spontaneously I get the feeling of oneness. So the second thing that the ego teaches us is that I am separate. I am separate from him, he is separate from her. And so that fosters a sense of competitiveness, that I have to compete over somebody, I have to cheat him, I have to defeat him, I have to overcome him, the feeling of competition, the feeling of that somehow I am incomplete. And so only by overcoming others, only by conquering others, I can consider myself superior, I consider myself better. So this feeling of competition comes because of this ego, because I think myself to be separate from all. Then the ego also creates this feeling that I am special. You know, maybe I have some skill, so I feel I am this great person, I have this great ability, I am so intelligent, or I am so rich, or I am so powerful, or I am somehow God has favored me, you know, God loves me more than others. And that is foolish, because that one almighty, all-loving, all-powerful, all-compassionate entity, he cannot love one individual more than another, he cannot love one animal more than a bird or more than a fish. Just as a mother, you know, when she has three or four children, she loves them all equally. Now, the children may have different outcomes based on their tendencies, based on their habits, based on their ideas. You know, one child may be very artistic, another one may be athletic, another one may be scientific, a fourth one may be, you know, worthless, doesn't do anything, doesn't study. So she loves all equally, even if one may be a drug addict or maybe a thief, but their results of their lives will depend on their entity. So similarly, God loves us all equally, but each one of us suffers or enjoys the results of our own action. It's not that he is granting any special favors to anybody. Whatever good or bad is happening to us is a result of our actions of this life and of previous lives. You may say, well, why is someone born rich and healthy, another one is born suffering? We believe that we have all had multiple lives. And so that God cannot be playing favorites. He cannot be flipping a coin and say, okay, heads, you know, I put him in the White House, and tails, I'm going to put him in a jungle in Africa. It's not like that. We get whatever is because of our own karmas, our own tendencies. So there is nobody special, everybody is special. That oneness to understand is the lack of ego. Then when we are under the grip of ego, we are very easily offended. He shouldn't have done this, you know, she shouldn't have said that. Why do they do like that? Why can't people, like in that movie, My Fair Lady, you know, the English professor, he says, why can't a woman be more like me? You know, or why can't a woman be more like you? He asks his friend, he says, you know, would you be offended if I forgot the day we first met? He said, no. He said, well, then why can't a woman be like that? Why? So, you know, men are different from women. You know, each individual is special, is unique, is a wonderful creation of the Lord. And to expect that they will be different from what they really are is causing problems. So why do I get offended? Because I expect somebody to do something which he or she is not capable of, or that's not their characteristic. And so when we try to change people, and when they don't change, when they don't behave the way we want, then we get offended. The fifth is, the ego is cowardly. And the main thing that we think that makes us very cowardly, I think that I am a sinner, that I am a born sinner, and I am somehow, you know, something is wrong with me, and that is why everything happened. So the moment I think of myself to be a sinner, or I think myself to be, then I have separated myself from God. Because as we have said before, there is only one consciousness that pervades everywhere. God is everywhere. Whether he's there in the saints, he's there in the sinners, he's there equally. Nobody is 100% saint, or nobody is 100% sinner. Everybody is a mixture of good and evil. It is up to us what aspect of my life I cultivate. Do I cultivate my saintly qualities, or do I cultivate my negative qualities? So this cowardliness then manifests in separation from God, where I think that I am not good enough, you know, to be with him. He does not love me. And so when I do that, then not only I separate myself from God, but I separate myself from myself. Because I separate myself from my true inner being, the inner voice, the inner love, the compassion. And that's when all the negative qualities arise. Why do negative people act negatively? Because they go away from their true nature of divinity. And so they say that turn your attention inward. And the more you do that, the more you will find that the inner joy, the inner peace, the inner silence cannot come in the world. True joy can only come within. And that brings us to the sixth item, that ego thrives on consumption. People always think that by getting the next object, I'll be happy. It could be the next house, it could be the next car, it could be the next million, it could be the next wife. You know, could be the next state. You know, I'm unhappy with California. You know, the business climate is terrible. I'm going to move to Texas, or going to move to Nevada. Or I don't like Bakersfield, so moving to the coast. I'm tired of the heat, you know, 100 degrees. So consumption, so trying to get more, acquire more, possess more, and want more. And what that does is makes me always feel that I am not good enough. I am not complete enough. I am somehow incomplete. And so that sensation of incompleteness, of sensation of not being good enough, creates all the disturbance in the mind. Why is my mind agitated? Why is my mind upset? Because I don't have that. It does not mean that one should not, you know, work hard or try to be successful. But the idea that my happiness or my peace of mind depends on something out there, something in the future, that what it does is, even Eckhart Tolle in The Power of Now says that happiness can only arise in the now. Even the Upanishads say that here and now, when I am contented, when I am at peace with myself, when I am happy the way I am, I still work, I still do whatever I need to do, I still work as hard, but at the end of the day I say, oh Lord, I am thankful for what you have given me. So that attitude of being comfortable with oneself and not thinking that my happiness will depend on objects or things is how you overcome the ego. And the last one is, the ego is insane. What is an insane person? An insane person is one who thinks something different from what they are. So, you know, somebody who suddenly starts thinking, you know, I am the emperor, or starts thinking I am a dog, or starts, you know, people have all these different, you know, paranoid tendencies, and they start thinking of themselves. And we have all come across people who think that they are something different. So I actually am a divine being. my true nature is of the nature of divinity, of the nature of self, but when I think of myself as this limited creature, then I suffer all the consequences of that. So what they say is that recognize the divinity within you, allow that divinity to flow through you, and slowly you will find that this ego will lose its hold upon you. The ego is not something you need to fight. It's not something you need to overcome. You just need to shine a light on it. Like say if there is darkness outside your house and you need to, you know, you find your way, you know, through the backyard, you know, to go to the back fence and it's completely dark, all you need to do is take a flashlight and shine it and your path will be clear. So the ego is of the nature of darkness, of the nature of ignorance. All you have to do is shine the light of wisdom, of inner self, and the ego by itself disappears. So once you have reduced the ego, then you turn your mind towards wisdom, of knowing who God is and what is my relationship with God. As we said, true love comes when you identify and become one with that, and that's what the lives of the saints were. But people always try to see the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is what intellectually, what I'm speaking right now, what we are discussing, what we are thinking is knowledge. But when that knowledge becomes my own inner experience, then that is called wisdom. So like, I know how to cook and I make a recipe and I make the food, and that is knowledge. I got the. But when I take that dish and eat it and become one with that, then that is wisdom. That is experience. Okay, I learned a new dish and I learned how to eat it. So similarly, in spirituality also, initially we get knowledge by reading the books, by listening to, you know, saints and teachers. But then when I apply that knowledge in myself, in my life, and I experience the wisdom of that knowledge, then that is called true understanding. And that is what the saints did. They were not alone just satisfied with hearing about God. They said, I want to know God. I want to meet him. I want to become one with him. Another mistake that people make on the spiritual path, I am equally guilty of that, is we try to know God intellectually. And you know, in the last few months and few years, we have done different intellectual texts. You know, Gyan Sar, that I am that, you know, entity, I am that Brahman, I am that consciousness, I am that divine being who is functioning in the body, and then how to purify the mind, and how. And that is all very good, you know, reading the scriptures. But intellectually trying to understand God is destined to fail. You cannot capture him with your intellect. You cannot know him. You cannot understand him because his knowledge is so vast. His being is so immense. So then how do I reach him? How do I know him? Through the heart. The heart is a very, very powerful weapon. We all possess the ability to love. So when you love something, when that something becomes a part of you, becomes in your heart, so a combination of brain and heart, knowledge and love, together when they work, it becomes a very, very powerful weapon to know God. I'll end with a very short story. There was this great saint in India called Surdas. And he was blind. He was blind from birth. But a great devotee of the Lord. He, all the time, he would sit and compose songs of love for God. And he always sang love songs. But these songs were not only full of love, but full of great meaning. And he constantly thought about God, and he constantly loved God. And he loved the form of Krishna. You know, we worship God in many different forms. That there is one universal entity called Brahman who takes different forms. He can take Krishna or Shiva or Mother Goddess or Ganpati. So he loved the form of Krishna. And he loved him so much that he said, I want to experience your closeness to me, God. And his love was so powerful that it is said that one day he was sitting and just singing in great love for the Lord, and Krishna himself appeared next to him and stood in the physical form. You know, Krishna, as we know, took a physical form, appeared on earth. So it says God appeared before him and was standing next to him, actually in the flesh, as a human. Now, he was blind. He obviously couldn't see, but his intuition was so powerful that he knew that God is here. He could feel that power. You know, God is so powerful, he can't hide his power. So he said, so he immediately reached out his hand and grabbed, you know, Krishna's hand and, you know, caught him as tight as he could. Of course, that was God himself. And so for a second, he held on, and then Krishna, being very playful, pulled his hand away, and he just ran away. So as he was going, he says, Krishna, you can free yourself from my hand. I know that you are more powerful than me, but I'll consider you powerful if you can get out of my heart. Do you have that much strength and power to get out of my heart? If you can, then I'll consider you as an almighty, powerful God. Try, you can't do that. So that kind of confidence, that kind of love, that God is constantly with us, that is called true love. And so wisdom is a combination of knowledge and a combination of love. So when one truly loves God as my own being, as much as myself, then that person becomes a saint. And then that person becomes a vehicle of God. That person becomes an instrument of God. So that is called supreme love, total identification. So that's what we have studied today. Next week, we shall study about God. Who is God? What does he do? Where is he? I know these are all difficult subjects. I sometimes struggle to explain these. I tried my best today. Ego is actually, can take hours to talk about. But I thought I'll just cover a few ideas that I got from different books. We have time if anybody has any comments, any questions. True. Yeah, that's a very good point. Right. That I'm not good enough. I think it comes from our vasanas, our tendencies. You know, what we do good or bad is because of our good or bad tendencies. But to blame an external power like the devil or my neighbor or my friend or peer pressure, it's all right. That's taking the coward's way out. That's what they say, it's cowardly. That's a good point. Thank you. Well, the ego, I mean, see, you need this body and this mind and this intellect to function in the world. We're not saying that give up this body, give up this mind, give up this entity, that whether Taylor or whatever your name is and whatever your entity is. You need, as we had talked even last week, you need a body to function in the world. I need my hands, I need my speech, I need my eyes. And I need to work in the world. But with what attitude do I work? You know, do I work as a limited individual that I am separate from everybody else? And I'm, as even Swamiji says in his book, when I identify just I am this body, you know, that I am this body, then I don't even care for my family. I am only here to take care of myself. I don't care about my wife or children or my spouse. Then I say, okay, I am this family, you know. But then for my family, I'll do anything. I'll cheat others, I'll harm others. Or if I say I am, identify with my nation, you know, okay, I am an American. But that's very good. But then it should not happen that at the expense of, you know, that if somebody is not an American. So as you widen your sphere of influence, you know, your ego becomes less and less. From me, I am this body, to I am this family, to I am a citizen of Bakersfield, to I am a citizen of America. And then ultimately, I am a citizen of this world. This whole earth is one. So with what attitude, whether you work as a separate individual or my action is to serve the world. So whatever talents I have, whatever job I am doing, of course I have to earn a living, but my main purpose of living is to serve, to help others. So through my job, whatever work I am assigned to do, whatever situation I am in, I should work with an attitude of service. and an attitude of not of arrogance, but that the Lord is working through me. So the more you remind yourself that there is a divine power working through me, your actions become unselfish, they become more serving, they become more helping. And in the process, you still have to earn a living. We're not saying that you don't work and to earn a living. You have to take care of your family, your children, your wife. But my attitude should be an attitude of service. My main goal in life should not be just to acquire money and power, but how much I can give to the world, how much. So then slowly you reduce your ego and that. You still work. The saints also worked. You know, they also had to take care of whatever activities they needed. And some of the saints even had, you know, families. And so they had to take care of them. But they did not limit themselves. Like Mahatma Gandhi, he did not only think of his children. He thought of the whole country's children as his children. In fact, his children sometimes felt that they were neglected because he didn't spend enough time, you know, with them. So, because they see the whole nation as me or the whole world as me. So that's how you reduce the ego. I don't know if that answers the question. Thank you. Good question. Yeah. Which one? Human nature?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe we are all intrinsically good. We are all saints. We are all divine. Yeah. Human nature is intrinsically good because within us is God's presence. So we cannot be evil, we cannot be mean, we cannot. But that goodness, when it is covered with negative tendencies, with negative habits, with negative thoughts, either it could be from birth or it could be through, like from childhood. You know, say a child lives in a horrible situation, is abused, is mistreated, grows up in a bad company. So it could be either from previous birth or from this birth you acquire negative tendencies. So essentially, we are all divine and we have the capability. Every one of us can become Jesus. Every one of us can become a saint. It's just that we have turned away from our divine nature. And what was the second part of your question? Yes, yes. Because I, like we said, ego is my false self. My true nature is divinity, but I have taken on this mask of, oh, like there may be an actor, he's actually a very good person, but he's asked to play the role of a villain. And a good actor, even no matter how good he is in the villain's role, he will do all the bad things. He will cheat, he will rape the heroine, he will, you know, murder and all, and he will get away with it. So same way, you and I, we are essentially divine, but we have taken on this mask of this ego. And that creates all our problems. And that is when we act. When you act as an egocentric individual, then all the things called like selfishness and arrogance and pride and hatred and jealousy, all those things arise. But if you look at saints, they have none of that. They have no pride, even though they may be, you know, so, they may have millions of followers, but they have absolutely humility. They have love for all. They have no arrogance. They have no pride. They have no... Why? Because they are in touch with their true self and they see that the my divine God is there in everybody. So the more you are in touch with your true divinity, the more you become in touch with all. So that is how I think that is the difference between ego and the spirit. Ego is actually something I have created between the self and between the body. It is a false understanding of who I am. Ego is not something like gross that you can touch. The spirit you can experience, you know, in your meditation. The body you can touch. The mind you can feel. The emotions, the intellect you can understand. Ego is an imaginary creation of my own wrong understanding. So ego is nothing but a misunderstanding of who I really am. So ego is not something substantial, not something which you can feel or touch. Ego is a lack of understanding. Right, right. My ignorance. Yeah, the ignorance that I am, as long as I realize my true nature, I remain in ignorance. Yes, I will take a... the individual, the ego, will take another body, and will not only that, but within this lifetime itself, it takes up a lot of bodies, the ego, that I, you know, I have this much, then I think I'll get more, and I'll acquire more, and I'll possess more, and I am, you know, a doctor, but I am not happy with that, so I want to take up law, or I want to take up business. So the ego takes on more and more entities, takes on more and more qualities, it takes on more and more forms, yes. So the ego thrives on forms, thrives on different forms. So ego is nothing but a lack of understanding of who I am. And yeah, that will continue until you give it up, and with the light of knowledge, when you shine the light of knowledge, then you realize your true nature as divinity. So it's a misunderstanding. Actually, all of us are divine, but I don't know that. And that is when the ego arises. Because a saint, if you look at, has no ego. If you truly talk to a saint, it does not mean that the saint is a carpet you can walk over him. It's not like that. He's not but he has great moral and physical strength, but he does not try to impose it upon others. That is also a sign of ego, when I try to push my ideas upon you or try to forcefully convince you of my thoughts and my ideas. I don't know if that answers your question. It's a difficult subject. I myself need to think more about it.
And while we eat, how we sleep, we become grudged.
Are you talking about three kinds of people, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic?
Yeah, those three.
Yeah, so sattvic and rajasic or tamasic are the three qualities under which we function at all times. We have all three of them. Tamasic is the lazy one. Rajasic is the active, passionate, power hungry. And sattvic is the pure, the knowledge. So each one of us has all the three qualities. We have some element of laziness, we have some element of activity, then we have some element of knowledge. So people who are predominantly lazy and useless and don't do much and expect society to take care of them, we call them tamasic. You know, people who are, say, addicted to drugs or who are just, you know, not working for themselves and want society to take care of them. So they are called tamasic. The majority of the world is rajasic, where we want to acquire, we want to possess, we have passion and we have power and we want objects and possessions, and we work and we acquire. But that is good. But when the rajasic becomes power hungry, then I want things that don't belong to me. I get things that I don't deserve, that are unjust. And along with this rajas comes, you know, greed and jealousy and hatred and competition and all. Sattvic people are the pure people who have knowledge as their prime goal, and they are the ones who are more peaceful, who are more saintly. They could still be working, you know, they could be even a politician, or it could even be a king. Like, we have examples of so many kings who were very, very divine people, very nice people who worked for the welfare of all, you know, people who worked for service, who worked to help others. So the goal of spirituality is to go from laziness to activity and from activity to purity. But these three qualities are there in us throughout the day. Like, when I wake up in the morning, my mind is very peaceful and I look at the sun and I worship God and I chant his name, then I'm in a sattvic mood. And then I go out and work and I go out and acquire, I go out and possess, then I'm in rajas. And then at the end of the day, I'm tired and I'm sleepy and I say, no, I don't want anything, I just want my bed, then I am in a tamasic mood. And so that is okay. You know, you need all those three to function in the world. You can't always be active and you can't always be in knowledge. You need some amount of rest. But a person who predominantly lives his life in tamas, in laziness, or in power and in rajas, then such a person gets stressed, he gets a tamasic person, of course, doesn't do anything. So, but a rajasic person has a lot of stress because of his competitive nature. So the idea is to reduce my activity, reduce my competitiveness, and try to make my mind peaceful and quiet. and still work in the world, but with peace as my main goal.
This key word, temperament. What is the,
yes.
How are they related to evil?
Right, the temperament, yes. Yeah. The more I am in the rajas and tamas, the more I am in the grip of ego, the more I go towards sattva, towards purity, the closer I come towards God. So that's what they say. You have to evolve from the lower tendencies and the lower temperaments to the higher temperaments. And ultimately even go beyond even the sattva to that purity where you go beyond all of these tendencies. Actually, that's what we are actually even studying on the Sunday class. We don't have it now, but in August, the Sunday class, we are talking about these three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. That whole chapter is devoted to that, Sunday 11 to 12. If you want, you can go to my talks on firstpower.info, where we have talked about these gunas. The website is called firstpower.info, and there you can see my talks on these, the same subject of sattva, rajas, and tamas.